Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Grandfather's here.
Can't you tell me I'm sick? He'll pinch my cheek. I hate that.
Maybe he won't.
Hey, how's the sickie? Huh? I brought you a special present.
What is it?
It was the book my father used to read to me when I was sick, and I used to read it to your father. And today, I'm going to read it to you.
It was a time when life didn't seem so complicated.
Marriage is what brings us together today.
What?
What? What?
I'm killing myself once we reach the honeymoon suite.
Wouldn't that be nice?
A courtly age of gentle conversation.
I will always come for you.
But how can you be sure?
This is true love.
Oh, no. Is this a kissing book?
No. Actually, there was a lot of treachery. Peril. And revenge.
Prepare to die.
Never go in against a Sicilian when death is on the line!
There were affairs of state.
But I've got my country's 500th anniversary to plan, my wedding to arrange, my wife to murder, and Gilda to frame for it. I'm swamped.
And affairs of the heart.
My Wesley will always come for me.
Your Wesley is dead.
I've seen worse.
Bye bye, boys!
Have fun storming the castle!
It's more than turning.
What's the difference? We've got him.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Goodbye!
It's a story of love, a tale of adventure. It's as real as the feelings you feel.
You're kissing again.
Someday you may not mind so much.
The Princess Bride. Not just your basic, average, everyday, ordinary, run-of-the-mill, ho-hum fairy tale.
Indiana Jones, Avengers, Endgame, it follows. Joker, Wreck-It Ralph, Mamma Mia, here we go again. Titanic 2, Jack's back, 7 cents, Ghost Attack, Alien vs. Predator, except this on their friend. We'll keep watching the movies right up till our TVs break. So just crank up the volume till your speakers start to shake. You need a second take.
Are you kidding? Fencing, fighting, torture, revenge, giants, monsters, chases, escapes, true love, miracles, and Sebastian.
All sports.
Yep.
You were not hired for your brains, you hippopotamic lambast.
I'm Andy Schossner.
Inconceivable. I'm Jordan.
Oh, good God.
I don't think that word means what you think it means.
And welcome to our review of The Princess Bride, the film we put on the list so Alex would finally watch The Princess Bride, and he's not here. So
he should. It's such a fun film and so quotable.
Very.
I'm sure he would love it if he actually watched it, which is never going to happen now because this podcast was my last gambit to make this happen.
He doesn't even listen to the show. He's an idiot.
It's true.
To be fair, I'd never seen it before.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no.
Really?
Well, generally, I tend to avoid movies with Princess and Bride in the title independently. Yeah. So together, didn't really know what I was in for. But
and it's not about...
No, not at all.
It's not that sort of story.
Not at all what I expected.
It's more like Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Yeah,
by
definitely.
By Mel Brooks than anything else.
I remember discussing this film with Alex about a year ago and him being like, why would we possibly review this film? And like halfway through the conversation, realized he was talking about The Princess Diaries, which is the one with Anne Hathaway. And I was like, what? No, I haven't even seen those. Why would I make us do that? But it's going to happen next year. We're going to do all those films, all the DVD ones.
And High School Musicals. Let's
Disney Plus. This is becoming really achievable for us to do now.
Camp Rock.
Oh, my debate team in high school was called the Wildcats after the High School Musical team.
Okay,
I've never seen a single movie in that series, but apparently it was very funny. So we were the Wildcats.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that's my one, that's my two cents for this entire review. Oh, good. So I've obviously seen this, you know, half a dozen, if not more, times myself.
Me too.
It's one of my friend's absolute favorite films, and she made me watch it with her maybe 10 years ago. And yeah, it's latched onto it since. That's a good old time.
I have to confess, I haven't seen it in a while. Mm. Like, definitely a few years. But it certainly wasn't the first time I'd seen it. And it's one of my wife's favorite films.
Oh, it's easily why. So many people's favorite films are. It's what? Okay, it ticks all my boxes. It's about an hour and a half long. It's whimsical, which I think is a great word to describe this film.
I forgot how funny it was.
Oh,
how funny the villains are too.
Yeah.
Or not the villains, very, very I should fun. Say. They swap
Miracle Max is hilarious. And the albino whose name escapes me.
Mel Smith.
No, the actual character I meant. But yeah.
Oh, yeah. Whoever.
He's very funny as well.
Yeah.
Even Humperdinck has his moments.
Yeah. Everybody's very well cast. Everybody's very good at what they do.
Yeah.
One of the bits of trivia that Mandy Patinkin suffered his worst injury on set with Billy Crystal just because he was holding back his laughter so much, he ended up with a bruised rib.
Oh, that's terrible.
What a way to go.
Yeah.
And Andre the Giant's in this one. So it's our sleeper little, here we go. Are we starting? No, but this year, four wrestling films on the schedule. This is but a taste of them. This does not count. We're getting 4.5 wrestling films this year if you count this one. And he's so big, I dare say we're getting 5. Does that work? Does that
makes it. He's the whole film.
Does my math track there? Good stuff from Andre. I'll go ahead and say before we get into the review, considering he's not an actor, he does pretty well, I think. He doesn't feel like
he's not even English.
He's not. He's very French. He's a Frenchman.
Very French.
Which is funny because he doesn't run away that often in this film. You'd think for a Frenchman, you'd see a lot of his back.
The author of the book, William Goldman, he always wanted Andre the Giant to play Fezzik. Mm. But at the time it was first being developed, he just wasn't available or wasn't interested.
Sure.
And so they were considering Arnold Schwarzenegger because he was sort of an up and comer at the time, but still a nobody. Fit the bill. He was, you know, a massive guy with a weird accent, and that would have been fine. It took 12 years before a successful production landed with this one. Like it had been tried like 4 or 5 times.
Oh, okay.
And Robert Redford was in charge of one of the productions, and it just fell away. I suspect that happens a lot in Hollywood.
Even, Mortal Kombat even 3, it's still coming.
But by the time it came around, Arnie was a big star.
Yeah.
So there was no way that they could afford him, but Andre the Giant said yes.
Yeah. And what a good guy.
So Goldman got Andre the Giant in the end.
So all turns out apparently he was in like really, really bad shape when they were making this movie.
Yeah.
Like it was kind of like the peak of like his like physical problems.
Yeah.
Just from obviously being the size that he is.
You're watching him walk around though. He doesn't look like he's mobile. Yeah.
It was like they did like a, I think it was either like Showtime or HBO or something, had like a doco on him a couple of years ago that came out. And there was like a big portion of it was like dedicated to this movie and just about like everything that he had to go through like making the movie. Like apparently like the scene where like he catches whatever her name is when she's come out of the window.
Buttercup.
Yeah. Like apparently even though she was on like, you know, like strings or whatever, like, even just having to like physically hold her was like really difficult for him at that time, which you wouldn't expect because he's fucking massive.
Also, but professional wrestler.
Yeah.
There's always people around for a job.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently like the whole production was just like really, really hard on him.
Yeah. It's terrible. He wouldn't have lasted too much longer after this film. I don't think. Cause he died quite early.
I think he died
on.
In the '90s. Yeah.
What year did this come out in again? It was 87. So I'll hit up good old Andre.
But universally loved.
Okay, so it's 6 years after this actually, but he died at 46. So look at how he looks in this film. He was 37, so even then he looked a lot older than he actually was. But you'd be familiar with, we reviewed him in really briefly in Jingle All the Way with The Big Show.
Yeah. Yep.
Same thing, but he actually had some corrective surgery to, I think it was with his pituitary gland or something like that.
Yeah, so
the part of his
like that.
Body that was causing him to have this gigantism and growth, he had either tampered with, removed, so to potentially avoid a situation like Andre, who just kept growing until
he lived
collapsed. Yeah. Well, he's still alive.
Well, there you go. Proving my point.
I mean, yes. defines on forever, but yeah. So, I mean, hopefully Paul White or Big Show, whatever, you know, doesn't have such an early end. I mean, touch wood, he's probably going to have an earlier end than most.
He's in great shape now.
Oh, yeah. And he's quite mobile. He had a match, I mean, like 3-4 weeks ago, he came back and he was taking bumps and everything
too. Recently, yeah.
Yeah. It's a good stuff.
Looking good.
Unlike Andre, who can't take any more bombs.
Mm.
Oh, he's bumping up in heaven.
Yeah. Just waiting for Hulkster to get there to tell him how you should and shouldn't talk to black people. All right. So
speaking of wrestling and other unimportant things, 8.1 IMDb rating. Rotten Tomatoes, 97% critical.
97. That's fuck off good.
94% audience. It is universally loved.
Yeah.
I can see that. It's a joyous little film.
I actually have a deck of cards from this movie I was going to share with you guys to show. And I actually brought them to work a couple of months ago and forgot them. They were in my little desk there because whenever I get bored on my overnight shifts, I start to shuffle just to make sure my dexterity stays up, which is the weirdest thing to admit on air, but I just to do it.
Can you do the pen flippy thing?
Not great. My ring finger betrays me. It sucks on both hands. For some reason, my ring finger just can't do it. My pinky and every other finger is like, yeah, fuck, here I got this. My ring finger.
It's because it's weighed down.
No, it's in both hands. Iron. It's actually quite a light ring.
Titanium or whatever.
It's quite light.
What is it made of?
It's made of that same stuff that Saruman makes his rings out of.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, whatever that is. Cut that back. Thank you. Yeah, it's mine.
Where'd you go?
What? Oh, I'm right here. I'm in the heart of every child and listener of this show. That's pretty good rating though. 97% critics. I mean, imagine having the balls to be one of those 3% that said, nah, I don't like this. Fuck off.
I don't think there's a bad thing to be said about this film.
It's short, it's sweet. I'm going to use this word a lot during the review. Whimsical, which you don't get very often in films.
And the story is so good, right? I mean, all you see for most of the film is the story that Peter Falk is telling Fred Savage. But it's so good, I keep on forgetting that the film is set in his bedroom.
Yeah.
Mm.
This is, I mean, you're seeing the story as he's narrating it and it's all in the imagination. That's not The Princess Bride, the film. That's set in the bedroom.
Yep.
And you just keep forgetting that.
Yeah.
The grandfather's fantastic.
He's good.
He's such a good voice as well. Yeah. Like it's very instantly relaxing to hear him read the story.
I was saying to my wife, can you imagine Mel Brooks sitting with his Jewish accent, also very distinctive voice, of course, but nobody works as well as Peter Falk does.
No, he's great. I'd assume he's also passed on by now.
Peter Falk? I think he died in about 20 years ago.
So recently?
Did you ever watch Columbo?
I've Columbo. Seen Columbo. I never watched it. As a
the greatest detective in the world, Columbo.
Was Batman would like a word with you.
No, he was better than Batman. Absolutely.
Yeah, so he died in 2011. Years ago. So actually, not as long. Yeah, he lasted longer than I thought. 83, okay, yep. Although his last picture on IMDb makes him look like a Muppet that got stung by a bee. It's not a flattering picture. All right. But yes, we've obviously got a bit of a history with this one. That's good. I'm happy with it. I'm glad that we finally got to do it. I'm just incredibly frustrated that we're the person that was here to be taught a lesson is not here to learn said lesson.
That's right.
But we've got Jordan, so I'll take that. That's good.
That's right.
To cram it down his throat some other way.
To be honest, I probably wouldn't have. I wouldn't have. Like I said before, I wouldn't have picked this one out if it wasn't on the schedule. So
you're welcome.
You've got one.
Yeah.
Because of the title.
Mostly, yeah. And just I guess I wouldn't look at that and be like, oh, what's that about? I'd assume that I know what it's about.
It is a bit.
And I would be kind of wrong. Kind of right, but kind of wrong.
Yeah. The title is a bit misleading.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, but in a sense it is because it's not a story about the Princess Bride.
Yeah.
It's about grandfather and.
Yeah, exactly.
And the boy.
Kind of the journey more than anything.
Yeah. There are different ways to entertain yourself than.
Yeah, games. Absolutely.
And I mean, there's
a. That cursed television.
Dang idiot box.
And even when you move away from the grandfather and the grandson into the actual story that he's telling him, it's, yeah, sure, it is about, you know, it is about the princess. It is, you know, it is about the prince. So I've forgotten his name, Wesley. But there's also quite a lot of there about Inigo Montoya, like Mandy Patinkin as well. Like, there's a lot of well-rounded characters. The only ones I'd say really get the short shrift in this is Andre, who's kind of is just what he is for the entire film, and Wallace Shawn, who we lose after 20 minutes into the film. But everyone else
love him.
Gets a lot. Oh, he's so good.
He's so over the top and stupid. It's amazing.
God damn, his voice is so frustrating.
I love his voice. It's iconic.
I love his voice too. I can't hear his voice without immediately thinking of Grand Nagus Zek from Deep Space Nine.
See, I get
who he played.
I get that, but I just straight away picture Rex from Toy Story.
Ah, there you go. Yeah.
Who's the Are they different? Who does Iago from Aladdin? Not him, is it?
That's Gilbert Gottfried.
He's worse.
He is worse.
He has a worse voice.
He's a magical voice.
Wallace Shawn has the pitch of an angel comparatively to Wallace Gilbert Gottfried. Oh, are you kidding me? Gilbert's voice is like nails on chalkboard to my soul. Like it's inside my chest.
You have to listen to the words, Seb. Listen to what he's saying.
No, absolutely not. Oh, God.
The man is very intelligent.
And
very funny.
Well, I'm glad that he's smart and funny, but he needs to talk through a modulator.
Despite his popularity, it didn't make that much money. It had a budget of $16 million and took about 31.
16, in, 1.6 million, sorry, yeah.
Yep, 16, which is about right for an 80s film, I would
yeah.
think.
Yeah.
And a comedy at that. I don't think it classified as anything else. It is a comedy.
Yeah, I mean, you could go comedy, I guess fantasy maybe, or just adventure.
But it's not, but it isn't really that either.
And they resurrect someone.
That's true.
And there are eels, and everyone knows they're not real. So.
Now speaking of the eels aren't in the book.
Okay.
In the book, in that scene, Vizzini says to Buttercup, these are shark-infested waters, then fills a cup with his own blood and pours it into the water to attract the sharks.
Oh, so they couldn't afford sharks. They had to go with eels.
Or Wallace Shawn's...
Freaking laser beams up their head.
Wallace Shawn's getting a bit old and we don't want to risk the blood. I don't know. Okay, interesting.
His method, you know, he'd do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he just plunged that dagger straight through his wrist.
But then took 31 in the American box office.
But it sits in everyone's hearts.
It does. I think since those numbers clearly have not been updated for all the DVD streaming numbers, because I would think the studio is still making a packet of that.
Oh yeah.
But as far as its original theatrical release, probably made its money back.
Like I know,
and that's it. It wasn't a huge hit. But it has become this cult classic.
Yeah.
It is weird going into this episode, though, that two out of four of us hadn't seen it or maybe even heard of it. Like, that feels weird because for me, this is quite a famous film. So I'm not sure if this group as a whole kind of serves as a good sample size. I mean, four never does, but I feel like this is a much more well-known film than that. Like, we're not, like, I feel like we're the outliers having 50% of us not seen it.
I think it's too small a sample.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there are films that both of you have seen that are famous and acclaimed and whatever that I haven't even heard of.
Yeah. Go watch The Warriors.
Like I'd always heard of it. It's just one that's like passed under my radar, I guess. Like I definitely heard of the movie, but just not one that I'd sort of sat down and been like, okay, I'm going to watch that.
Before I'd seen it as well, like Jordan, I thought it was just like, I'm going to say a very un-PC term, but young me was like, that sounds like a really girly film that I would not, I would not want. That's not Bad Boys 2. I'm going to watch that. You know, I've actually never seen Bad Boys 2 or 1, and I'm okay.
It's all right.
No, I'm sure they're both movies. That's fine.
There was one very famous tall man who auditioned for Fezzik. Would you care to take a guess at who that might be?
Oh, so it's an actual known actor?
Yeah.
John Lithgow. Man.
Not John Lithgow.
Damn it, he's the tallest actor I know.
He may have auditioned, but it's not.
I didn't read that. That was just guessing tall people that are actors. Yeah,
he's pretty tall, I guess. Not as tall as this guy.
This is an actor that we would actually know about, though. This isn't like the Guinness Book of Records tall man with glasses.
You'll know this name.
Tall actor. Are there any other descriptive words you could give for him apart from the fact that he's tall and a boy?
He's also very exceptionally well endowed.
That doesn't help me at all.
Famously well endowed.
Dave Bautista. Is it?
Liam Neeson auditioned for...
Wait, how is that?
Wait.
What?
I can't remember what movie it was, but he walks out of the water, out of the river or whatever, naked. Yeah. And yeah, the man's a tripod.
Big old dong.
Yeah. Okay. Now I'm going to have some weird stuff on my Google. That's fine.
You are indeed. Liam Neeson auditioned for Fezzik and director Rob Reiner scoffed and said, only 6'4". No, thank you.
I thought he was that tall.
Yeah, isn't it weird that I don't even associate Liam Neeson with the 80s? Like he's someone that I only kind of think of like recently.
Yeah, he was doing Bad Action then too.
Yeah, I'm sure he was. Yeah. But just one of those guys where like obviously he's older, so obviously he was working then. Mm. But he's just like not a name that I recognize out of like the last decade and a half.
Yeah. No, good actor.
Sorry guys, I have to Google this now.
Absolutely.
Please continue while I'm...
Uma Thurman also auditioned for Buttercup, not Fezzik.
Again, another name that I don't really associate with the late 80s.
No, she was very much an up-and-comer at the time, didn't have a lot of credit behind her. But Rob Reiner also said, sorry, too exotic looking. No, thank you.
Not white enough.
So iocane powder was imagined for the story. It's not real. Just like Australia, also imagined for the film.
We're all paid crisis actors.
Googling this is a lot more difficult than it should be, and I'm going to have to bail on this before seeing his dick.
Do you have safe search on?
I might do, but I honestly can't work out how to get it, remove it with this app.
One interesting reference that I didn't pick up on until I read about it. Christopher Guest stars as Count Rugen, who was also the character in This Is Spinal Tap, another Rob Reiner film, who talks about the speaker going to 11. And of course, he's the six-fingered man.
Yep.
So the speakers go up to 11 and his fingers go up to 11.
Yeah. I was going to say on note of this cast as well, Wesley goes on to play the fucking doctor in Saw.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a mind fuck for me.
I mean, you know, he went on to play Robin Hood.
Men in Tights,
and then went on to play the villain in Twister.
Then he went to play
the Doctor in Saw.
Stop.
Saw was 99.
Andrew, the fucking tornado was the villain in Twister. What the hell are you?
The tornado was not the villain.
Absolutely, it was the villain.
No, the tornado was a plot device.
That kills a lot of characters.
The real villain is Marriage Breakdown. That's
okay.
What
that also I will accept. Maybe there's a villain in a natural disaster film. He was a competing storm chaser, but he didn't like sick a tornado on them.
No,
he wasn't the weather wizard. He wasn't just fucking like dropping them on.
But he stole his idea for the drones, for the little. You know,
Andrew,
data collecting things.
For shame.
He stole credit for it.
For shame.
Not for shame. He was the
villain. If they wanted to keep it, they should have gotten a patent put on
them. The Twister is not the villain in
Twister. I think the villain here might be the patents officer who didn't complete this in enough time to secure it for them. This is some bullshit.
Right. I just had to IMDb it because I was like, wait, the doctor in Saw? That was Tobin Bell. And I was like, Dr. Gordon. Right.
So he's the doctor from the Saw 1.
Is it 99 or 2000?
No, it's like 2004.
2004.
And then he comes back and becomes a villain in one of the later Saws, which I have also not seen. Oh. I just know that he comes back as I now work with Jigsaw because he showed me the light. And the light is
basically a convert, He kind of took over that role in the last few.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Andrew, have you not seen the Saw series? Neither have I, but pretty much anyone that survives has legitimately a 50% chance of becoming a villain in another Saw movie going on. And I wish it was not that high. It might be higher than 50% if you survive.
I am so, so curious to see this new Saw that Chris Rock is at the helm of.
What? They're still making it?
Yeah, like they did like a final one and then it was like there was nothing for a few years. And
it was
then
called like Saw Final Picture or some shit.
And then Chris Rock was like, I want to make a Saw movie.
So, is it a reboot?
So that's happening.
Or is it a continuation?
I'm not too sure. Like there's a name that's come out for it. It's like something like a story from the Book of Saw or something. So I don't know whether it's like a sequel or like something that's set in the same universe or a reboot or what it is really.
Jigsaw's memoirs.
But as a fan of the series, I'm very curious to see what the fuck Chris Rock has to do with it and what his plan is.
Absolutely crazy.
It was like a museum of traps that were too outlandish even for Jigsaw to implement.
Maybe.
If you want to see that movie, it's called Law Abiding Citizen. And it's Jigsaw on the go. I was going to say, I'm not going to stand by a recommendation, but it's definitely just Jigsaw out in the real world rather than Jigsaw in a cage.
Gerard Butler would make a good Jigsaw.
He's a funny one. I enjoy him in certain movies, but then he does a lot of other movies and I'm like, just stop.
He does the same thing over and over again. Like that Olympus Down or White House Down or whichever one it was.
Yeah. Olympus is Fallen and then the White House Down.
That's right. They did do one like a couple of years ago. It was just called Jigsaw.
Yeah.
I completely forgot about it.
I thought
it hasn't been dead for that long.
I thought they stopped at Saw 7.
They did Saw 3D, but it wasn't the third movie. It was just Saw 3D. Oh. And then, Jigsaw was the final one, but I could vaguely tell you the plot of number one, and even then it gets retconned throughout.
I think
two to five or some shit too.
Saw 3D, I think, was meant to be the last one originally.
Yeah, but it was bad, so they were like, "Let's do it again with Jigsaw."
Yeah, and then
we haven't wasted enough money in this franchise. Yeah.
Though they make money, and they're not that expensive.
Yeah,
Danny Glover was in the first one, and let's be patriotic.
Yeah.
It is Australia Day we're recording this one on. If you're happy to call it that, it was actually an Australian movie. that they made like a 10-minute version of it, sent it, shopped it around, and it got picked up by a studio, and they went over and made it proper.
Yeah. So it turns out not in Australia though.
No, God no. Actually, was it made here?
I don't think so.
The first one, this is just the first one. But yeah, Danny Glover's in the first one.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
And Cary Elwes.
Yes. Who's that? Sorry, the Princess Bride. The other Sorry, Andrew, you were.
That's it. That's all the trivia.
That's all you got?
That's all I got.
Alrighty. Well, I guess we can talk about the movie then.
Have to.
I guess.
If we must. You know, watching it again, I had the feeling that this the Princess Bride feels like an American doing Blackadder.
It has a
real Blackadder feel for me. Like it's you're supposed to take it seriously, but at the same time, it's also satirizing, you know, the whole princess, you know, bad evil prince trying to take over the realm, and he's got this, you know, villainous plan to murder everybody and start these terrible wars just so he can garner more power for himself. You know,
I don't want to change all that. The subject, but sorry, when you guys think of Blackadder, do you think of the like the medieval version? Because you say Blackadder and I always immediately go to the war.
Well, that was the fourth season of Blackadder.
But that's when I think Blackadder, I just, like that's my image of Blackadder is Blackadder.
I think goes medieval forth. Straight away.
Really?
Yeah.
God, I'm the weird one. I hate that. Because when you said, I'm like, it's nothing like that.
Well, two of them were medieval. Like you had the first season, which was definitely medieval, set in the 15th century. And then the second one was set in Elizabethan England, which is 16th century.
Yep.
Then the third one is set in 18th century, what do you call it? The Georgian era.
Yep.
And then you have the First World War.
Was the first?
The first World War in number four.
For some reason, that's just the one that comes to mind. I remember watching all the other ones, but for some, or maybe it was just for me, it was funnier. I mean,
it's all the same. The only thing that changes is the era.
Yeah, all the same actors and everything.
Yeah, the same character all the way through.
Excellent. Good stuff. Sorry, just when you said that, I'm like, how do you think of that?
And it just felt like an American take on Blackadder.
Yeah. For me, it tonally, it kind of felt more like okay, this is not as silly as the films I'm about to say, but it felt more like
it's not silly.
No.
That's the whole point. It's the tone is very serious. You're supposed to believe that in the world of the story, this is really happening.
Yeah, that's what I thought was really interesting, because like it's done in such a way that it's obviously being like taking itself seriously and being true to, you know, like romance, fantasy, and comedy all at the same time. But it still does feel a little bit satirical as well, without being like over the top about it.
Yeah.
What's the Mel Brooks cowboy film?
Yeah,
Blazing Saddles.
Okay, not as silly as Blazing Saddles, but it kind of had that vibe for me as well.
Yeah,
and that's what I was trying to pinpoint, because and also like a very, very reserved, and I mean very reserved Life of Brian. Like I know we don't do movies anymore, but that's the two I would pitch it as, like in between there, but just a serious-ish comparatively version of those two films together.
It's not a farce.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which those things are more of than a satire. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
But
it's also
good.
Just a good comedy. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And it's a nice little story. I love that it's so basic. If I were to pitch this story, Andrew, I'm writing a script and I were to pitch it to you, you'd be like, yeah, so Seb, that's a children's thing. You've just pitched something that a kid might write in grade one or two. Because it is that level of basic.
Yeah, that's right.
Even like the bad guy is going to hook him up to a machine that's going to suck his life out. It's such a vague pitch.
It is. And yet it's done so well that even as an adult, you can enjoy it.
Yeah.
If this was a D&D campaign, I would be bored.
You think so?
But it works. And it kind of is. You look at the cast of characters that by the time they team up.
Yeah, first Roberts is going after Buttercup.
Yep.
And then he gets her and all of a sudden he's arrested by, it's not Prince Valiant, what's his name? Humperdinck.
Yeah. Yes.
Right, arrested by Humperdinck. Then it becomes a mission for his former adversaries who want to meet up with Vizzini, who don't know he's dead yet. Until Andre says that he's dead. But then they get together to rescue Robert so that Inigo Montoya can dispel his revenge.
Yep.
And then they all team up in order to save Buttercup, and so Inigo can get his revenge as well.
prepared to die.
Yeah.
And it does. The whole way along the story, the motivations change for what's going on, but the characters run with it and
they stay quite consistent.
Yeah. Definitely consistent.
I was going to say, like,
and they're reacting to the changes in the film,
which is always good. Like, all the motivations are very clear for everyone. Andre's just there to support his friend. His friend has this vendetta from, you know, when he was a child. There's the whole Wesley and it is Buttercup, isn't it?
It is Buttercup.
Buttercup and Humperdinck are very different names, but in my brain they're like, it's just garbage names.
they're silly names, you know, but it doesn't matter.
Miracle Max.
Yeah. Miracle Max is great.
I've seen
worse.
Oh, of course he has. What was the name of the actor?
Billy
Crystal.
Who isn't dead yet.
What? No.
He's very much alive.
Interesting. I'll have to look into that.
I don't know.
There's not much to look into. He's kicking.
But how old is he? I mean, like, he must be nearing 90s, if not.
No, he's not that old, is he?
Isn't he?
No. I mean, he's done up in makeup, but he's...
Sure, like 70?
Oh, yeah. He must be 70 help,
at the
though.
Most, yeah. All right. I mean, City Slickers was 92, and he couldn't have been more than 40 then.
I'm looking it up, if my thing loads. Okay. Billy Crystal is... Oh, don't make me do math. He was born in 48.
48, so that's 72.
That was annoyingly quick of you. It's like, I suppose we are onto like a nice flat 2020 at the moment. It's probably a lot easier too. In my head, I'm still like working out like there's a 9 in there somewhere.
50, 60, 70.
Yeah, he currently looks younger than he does in this movie, which is a good point for the makeup that he was in.
Yeah, he's done impressive. It very nicely.
Yeah, although to be fair, that picture should be taken years ago. No. All right, so kidnapping.
Yes.
So, what's the name? Vizzini?
Vizzini.
Vizzini is hilarious.
He's great.
Yeah, he's great,
a very frustrating character.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible how annoying he is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like an art form. And I wish I could be intentionally that annoying. Like, I know I can do it unintentionally, but I wish I could turn that on.
For a period in university, I used to spend a lot of time with this guy who would describe... He described Vizzini as deploying Andy logic in order to explain how he knew exactly where the poison was. Apparently, I was a lot more convoluted in my youth than I am now. Thankfully, I've learned to tone it down, hopefully to a not annoying level.
That's, you've fallen for my second trap. This movie was pitched so Alex would watch it, but also so we could have an intervention about your Vizzini-like qualities.
But also, you're still honey-dicking.
Yeah. Oh,
God. But that scene of him explaining it is hilarious. I know exactly where the poison is because I'm not an idiot, so I wouldn't reach for my glass. But you also know I'm not an idiot, so I wouldn't be reaching for your glass. But that's just the start of it. This goes so deep.
It was game theorying himself. Yes, right. What's the solution here? Just take her. I give up because I've agreed to an impossible situation, and the best situation is I'm either going to drink it and die, and then you win, or you can just have her, and I guarantee to live.
But see, he's so clever. He knows he can get away with it.
Why did he bother switching? I'm not saying it's not illogical. I just want to know his character. Why did he think switching mattered?
To play the game with him, because he knows that only one chalice has been poisoned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and so he knows where it is.
Oh yeah, of course he does.
He knows where the poison is. So he gets Wesley to, or the Dread Pirate Roberts at the time, to look away so that he can switch them, so that he can pick one that Wesley thinks is the poisoned one, mm-hmm. knowing that he's actually picking the right one. So that he can look into his eyes and goes, haha, you're poisoned, you're dead.
Yep.
And then Wesley out Vizzini's him anyway.
So good.
In a brilliant
It was such a fun scene.
Yeah,
I really loved it.
Before we get to there, though, he has fought Inigo Montoya on the cliff face.
Yes.
Which is fun. I mean, this would not pass anywhere in modern cinema, but I always love these old sort of swashbuckling style fight scenes.
And it should, because the sword fight is actually really good. The sword fighting through the whole film is good.
Mm.
Yeah.
It looks real because it is real a lot of the time.
This is an argument I got into with Zane and Alex a couple of years ago when we reviewed The Warriors, and they were saying the action's just bad. It compared to like modern fight scenes, it's terrible. It's really cliche. And I'm like, yeah, but it's kind of like, this is the kind of films I feel like. I like this kind of thing, because it's just, like Jason and the Argonauts. I'm not expecting, mm-hmm.
fucking flips over people and laser swords and shit. Like, it is what it is.
So stupid. Yeah, I hate that too.
So there's always, like, I'm always happy to see this kind of thing. I think it, I mean, it's nostalgia, it's cheap, it gets me, but it reminds me of the films I, you know, grew up watching. And it's nice. And this is literally, yeah, in that category. Yeah.
And it took them months to choreograph.
Yeah.
I can imagine. There's a, like, for something that's, like, a pretty, not basic, but I guess for what they were doing then, like, you can tell, like, how meticulously that would have been planned out.
Oh, yeah. And the original choreography was only a minute long.
Oh, really?
So when they showed director Rob Reiner, make it longer, please.
Yeah.
And they end up having to redo the whole choreography and add all bits so that they get the 3-minute fight.
And I like the little wrinkles, like the little, haha, I've been fighting with my bad hand the entire time thing. It's just little things that just make everyone so charming.
Yep.
And that's what they are. The main three that we get, they all just kind of, they're there just to win you over. Like, aren't we just the coolest, most approachable people? Like, there's not a single person in those three that you think would not, they wouldn't help you move. Yeah. Like, they'd all help you pick up the sofa and get it out of there. Maybe not Andre physically, but he'd try.
He'd do his best. Everybody along the way displays this honor that, you know, you wouldn't think would be there in the real world, because if you're really just wanting to get what you want, you would just carried out and whatever, you know, you would deploy whatever deception you needed to. Yep. But everybody's honorable.
Yeah.
Ryan?
Of course I'll help you up the cliff.
Yeah.
I want to kill you myself.
That's exactly right. You have my word. I will not kill you until you're up here. And then he said, no, take a rest. We'll fight when you're ready. We'll have a little chat. And, you know, that's when you get the story of the father. Exactly.
When he turns the corner, hit him in the back of the head with the rock. He's like,
yeah, that's not very sportsman-like. You know, I could have hit you, but I missed deliberately.
Yeah.
Let's fight it out the way God intended.
The good stuff.
Okay, it's an unfair match because you're mismatched physically, but it's fair in the sense that everybody at least knows exactly what's going on. There are no surprises.
Which actually kind of, I mean, when you point out Montoya, thank you, letting him up to have their honorable fight and Andre missing on purpose to have their honorable fight to then Wallace Shawn switching the glasses.
Yeah.
It does paint a nice
and
night.
And he's the only one that dies.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because he was a dick. But to be fair, if he just didn't try and trick him and play it straight, he also would have died. but he did, in a way, die by his own hand-ish.
Yes.
But he would have either exactly way, right. I guess.
Yeah.
But that's what he wanted
to have
a sneak
fight. He's the one who agreed to the challenge, who insisted on the challenge.
Yeah, you should take the ice bucket challenge instead. It would have been fresh and new by that time. And you're a bit of a flu, which actually, when it's said, this may have been fatal.
Yeah. So Wesley ends up being captured by Humperdinck.
Oh,
who then
we skipped over. Wesley was originally captured and killed by the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a cool name, by the way.
Yeah, it is. who was a genuine pirate.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was. He was said to be the best pirate in terms of he was the deadliest.
I was like, the nicest of pirates?
The most effective. No. He was just the most effective pirate. And in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Dread Pirate. The real guy.
He was a pirate of the Caribbean, you say?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wish he would have ended up in some other film then. This entire time we're allegedly Wesley's not Wesley. He's the Dread Pirate Roberts here to kidnap a princess for pirate reasons.
That's right.
That seems unnecessary.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And there's a lovely scene where Buttercup still thinks it's Dread Pirate Roberts and she sort of gets the one up on him and there's a nice big hill and she says, well, why don't you just die?
this is a great but also the stupidest thing you've ever described.
And then Wesley rolling down the hill, you know, screams his catchphrase that she knew Wesley as, because it's the only thing he ever said to her, as you wish, down the hill and, oh my God, it's Wesley.
I best also dive down the hill.
Exactly, roll down the hill the same way through the fire swamp.
Oh God, my brain works in a weird way. The stupid part was him yelling as you wish while rolling. I'm actually completely okay with her tumbling down the hill after him. It's hilarious. For some reason, that's like, oh, that's completely logical.
But of course, and then they have the exchange there. You find out the history that the Dread Pirate Roberts is just an affectation and it's a lot more terrifying to continue the name, but he's actually like the fourth
Dread Pirate
Roberts that there has been.
And they go to the swamp.
The fire swamp.
The fire swamp, which is a great little thing as well.
Yeah.
So what is it? There's fire, there's like quicksand, and there's was it rodents of unusual size? What's the phrasing?
Rouse.
Something like that.
Rouse?
The R-O-U-S.
Yep. And I stupid bit once again.
Yeah.
Was like, oh, I don't think they actually exist. Bam. It's like somebody throws a massive puppet at him. And he actually tears into him quite a bit. I was so surprised again. I'm like, oh shit.
And then when he burns the thing and it's kind of whimpering there.
Yeah.
And he stabs it a couple of times. Not even in the neck or the head. He just stabs it in the body and just, oh fuck.
Yep, good stuff.
I feel for the rat, and Jesus, don't torture the thing if you're going to kill it.
Poor rodent of an unusual size. Never did nothing.
Anything that's above like a mouse in size, I feel bad for being near it when it dies. Like anything, I mean, even a mouse.
Of course,
if it's a mammal, I have like, I'm sad.
Yeah. This is effectively a big dog. I forgot to mention this on my way, and there's a dead bird in your driveway, by the way.
Wonderful. I hate birds, so you'd be surprised how okay with that I am.
It's actually an interesting point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because well, genetically speaking, you're far closer to any other mammal than you are to, say, insects, which you don't give a shit about.
Yeah.
Dragonfly, cricket, I'll chop them in half with a pair of scissors, but a nice little mouse, oh no, you wouldn't chop a mouse in half with scissors.
Sad story time. Sad story time. Not as sad as you think. We keep our dog food inside in the containers, and we were hearing noises back in early December. And like I was watching TV and Jess is in bed and the dogs are in bed and I was hearing noises. And I went over and found that there was a mouse, a little field mouse, about maybe 2-3 inches long that was trying to chew through the thing. Every time I try to catch it, of course it's fucking faster than me, could not get it. So I put out a couple of humane traps, which effectively they're like boxes the mouse walks into, can't walk out of, to try and catch this thing so I could let it go outside. 1 month, it did not get fucking captured. And I heard it when I got back from Japan. And I was like, I have to. We just can't have mice in the house. So I went to Woolies and I got actual proper mouse traps.
The snappy ones.
The snappy ones. I didn't want to do this, but it had been literally just over a month because I had done it like 2 weeks before I had left and I was gone for 3 weeks and shit. And like, put them out and literally 4 hours later, snap. And I'm like, oh, okay, thank God. It's done. I thought it was still alive as well, but it wasn't. I was happy just to bring it outside. Ended up getting rid of it. It was very sad. Because I didn't want to kill it. I was was being as fucking patient as I can, having an actual pest in the house.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, I'll put it back, the trap back, because I've had two of them, just in case. And like 20 minutes later, bam, another one.
No way.
And I was like, oh, there was two of them. I just killed a little married couple. And they've been out since now for like a week and nothing else. So I think we just had the two. And they were like, they're fucking adorable. Yeah,
the kids are probably starved on the gutter somewhere, were they?
Well, the traps are still there just in case there's like backup coming. In case like mouse cops come to find them.
You'll forget about them, and then in 2 years' time, you'll be rummaging around your garbage.
Up my hand. What was interesting was they were like the pre-baited ones, like with the stuff in them, and I opened them out, and it smelled... Have you guys ever had like taro milk tea?
Yeah.
It smelled exactly like that, and I was like...
Oh, no wonder the mouse came really quick. Exactly. That's delicious.
Mm. And I was like, oh no, this trap's for me. It's like my favorite drink. And I made the joke to my wife, like, I'm going to make sure they're in places that are near the dog's food area, but also the dogs can't get to them. And like 10 minutes after making that joke, my dog Adelaide pushed the fucking dryer out of the way to try and get to this thing to put her nose against it, because it was like, apparently it's so delicious that she just needed it. The stuff itself isn't poisoned. It's just more so, I didn't want dog getting snapped on the nose.
Yeah,
of course.
They were just like the little shitty plastic ones. They weren't like the full, like, I think the dog's face would have been fine, but they weren't like the metal ones. But I'm a murderer is the story here. And I felt really bad, but I was also like, you can't argue with how efficient they were. 4 hours, two of them, as opposed to 30 plus days, none of them. So it just goes to show, guys, being humane, it doesn't work.
Well, in future, get the nice box ones and bring home a taro milk tea. You know it works.
Apparently. I still got the humane one out just in case as well. Like, I'm checking them all, but I think it's all in the clear. But at least my dog's food isn't being eaten anymore. Once again, like, we've got a lovely kitchen full of food, but they'll go for the dog's food. So you just can't help stupid sometimes.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
You know who was stupid?
Prince Humperdinck.
Prince Humperdinck.
What a dick.
To leave his prisoner unattended for so long.
Yeah. Wait. So she's being recaptured now? Are we back there?
So they exit the fire swamp. Wesley is captured.
Of course I'll let him go.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Humperdinck is going to order Wesley's execution for having kidnapped the princess. And she says, look, I'll marry you if that's what it takes. Just let him go. Let him go back to his ship. And he, of course, says, yeah, no problem.
That seems like a fair request.
Yeah, that's great. And then in an aside to his lieutenant, don't do any of that. In fact, do exactly the opposite.
I don't know why he's such a dick that he couldn't just like, if you want to kill him, just kill him. Why did he want to specifically torture him?
Because it's also, I mean, he's developing this machine. We
oh, that's right, it's R&D.
We hear Count Rugen say, look, we haven't tested it fully yet. Please, I'd really appreciate your thoughts on exactly what you're feeling. And he starts to cry just after being exposed to the lowest setting. And interesting. And writes in his little notebook.
Oh, that's so weird. But I do love like the bureaucracy of it all, though, in that part.
Yeah, exactly right. So at that same time, Inigo Montoya is getting drunk in the forest, in the prisoner's hideout that Vizzini said they should all head back to. And Humperdinck has ordered for the forest to be cleared out because he's heard through, not through his spy network, which his head guard also says, hey, I haven't heard that the princess is in danger in any way. And Humperdinck says, no, she is, and the threat is coming from the thieves forest or whatever it is, the thieves village. Clear it out. And away we go. Mm. Inigo Montoya is drunk there as it's all being cleared out. Andre the Giant comes back as he's fighting a guard, and says Vizzini's dead. We need to sober you up and try and you know make sense of whatever's going on. And Inigo Montoya says, oh, I have to get the guy. I have to get revenge on my guy. And the only way they're going to do that because they've lost Vizzini. Andre the Giant says, "Yeah, we have strength and we have your sword play, but we don't have the brains. But you know who did have the brains? Mm. It was Wesley, who has been captured by Humperdinck.
So much smarter than Vizzini.
That's right. He had to be because he bested him. So let's go and rescue him in order to be able to break into the castle to get your gun.
What this actually is in D&D terms is he's actually Wesley compared to these guys. These guys, I mean." Montoya's a rogue. I'd say Andre's probably a barbarian, just given that he's pure strength-based.
Yeah.
And Vizzini was, for lack of a better term, let's say like a wizard or a mental-based character. Yeah?
Yes.
And what has happened is Wesley's coming to mid-maxed strength, intelligence, and dexterity. So in their isolated fields, he's actually quite stronger than them. But wisdom-wise, constitution... Actually, no, his con's pretty high too because of the poison, I guess. Oh, that's tough.
Mm.
He hasn't really mid-maxed. I think... Wesley's just an illegally created character. He just seems to be every class.
I don't know.
Maybe they're all level 5 and he's walked in level 10. He's just like fucking with them.
He spent a lot of time being the Dread Pirate Roberts. So who knows if he wasn't on quests that were doubling up his experience points.
You're right. No. Mm-hmm. Swashbuckler is a rogue archetype and they take the skilled feat, which explains why he's able to bump up some of his stats quite high there.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. You get some boosts, back-to-back adventures.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
That XP is overflowing.
Hey DM, can I not take the extra gold and just take a level instead? And the DM's just rolled over, and now we've got this god tier character walking on with these plebs, these level 2 adventure starters. Yeah.
Well, he's not godlike. I mean, he still gets captured. He's still injured.
Yeah, and then they suck the life from him with a machine.
That's exactly right. 50 yeah. years of his life.
50.
Yeah, they kill him.
Oh yeah, true. Humperdinck
comes back in a huff and saying, you know, if Buttercup doesn't want me, that you know she's dead anyway. But fuck you, Wesley. And he jams the thing all the way up to 11. Actually, all the way up to 50.
It's insincere in context of the film, but it's acted sincerely. This wonderful part when he talks to Buttercup, just saying like, "We're gonna go look for him. If he doesn't want to come back to you, could you please consider me?"
Instead of killing yourself.
Yeah, as like a second option to suicide. Yeah. And it's actually weirdly sweet.
Yeah.
It's quite a nicely written line that I wish a dickhead didn't say. Because it's actually quite nice. Like, hey, I get that things suck, but...
But his plan that he reveals very soon after capturing Wesley is that he was the one who hired Vizzini to kill her. But now it's even better because if she dies as the queen, that'll rally the citizens into starting this war with the guilders even more fiercely.
Except for that one boo lady.
Yeah.
Thank you for setting up. That's a great segment.
Yeah.
That's the life of Brian part that got me.
Yeah, definitely.
Just that one person in the crowd telling you off and done so well.
You had true love and you squandered it. You're stupid. Yeah.
Boo this man.
Oh, good shit.
But that ended up being a dream anyway.
Oh, shit. What?
Because she
whole thing's a blur.
The climax of the film is at the wedding, But that was just Buttercup being tormented by nightmares for having left.
Yeah.
For not having pursued Wesley further.
Yeah, I completely skipped over that was a dream, and in my head I was like, how did the lady not get executed? It's the worst kingdom ever.
And of course the king is dead in that dream, which he isn't later on.
This film's full of resurrections. I don't know.
And he's walking Buttercup sort of down the corridor after the wedding, and she says, "Well, you know, thank you very much. It was nice knowing you. Goodbye. This is the last time I'll see you, because I'm going to kill myself in the honeymoon." that's nice. She kissed me.
Surprisingly dark but light at the same time. Now, I will say, we're coming into this having seen it before, so whether I'm not blaming nostalgia on it, I love this film. It is what it is. But Jordan, was it hitting you in this sort of like magical way? Or how did you actually feel when watching it?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was definitely like, because it does have that kind of fantasy element, it does kind of bring that on at the same time.
Okay.
But yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was everything that it needed to be, I guess, for what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really, I guess, the word that you've used, I think, is the correct one. Whimsical.
You're welcome.
It is a rather whimsical little film. Yeah, I really, really liked it.
It hit every mark. There's no low point in the film.
Yeah, and that's what I meant before as well. Like they do everything really well. Like they did the fantasy stuff well. They did the comedy stuff well. Yeah. The romance where it is done really well as well.
And the story keeps moving.
There's no like slow points.
No, but it's not too fast that you feel like it's getting ahead of itself.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it just flows on.
It's all of its plot naturally. Points in like the right kind of flow to it. Yeah, definitely. The
last point I think that we should definitely talk on. And I'm hoping somebody may have accidentally researched this because I tangentially remember it. Mandy Patinkin as Montoya versus Humperdinck.
He doesn't find Humperdinck.
Not Humperdinck. Count Rugen. Count Rugen, sorry. They're having their little sword battle to the death. Have you guys heard or seen the interviews with Mandy Patinkin talking about doing that scene?
No.
So his father had died. Either recently or recent enough that it was fresh in his mind to cancer. And he goes to credit his performance in that scene when he, because you know, he's got that line, "My name is Ignacio Montoya, you killed my father, prepare to die."
Yeah, it keeps on building and building in its ferocity, yeah.
The reason he's like pretty much crying by the end of it was he said part of his like, you know, doing his, going through it and trying to get in the hearts of the character. To get the emotion right, he was acting as though he was talking to the cancer that had killed his father, which is why he's particularly emotional in that scene, which is
pays off.
It's fucking fantastic. And I mean, whether or not, I mean, it's a very common thing that I think we can all kind of identify in one way or another, knowing someone or at least seeing someone go through that. Once again, like this film, people gave a fuck about when they made, and it really shows that everyone put everything they had into this one. And as silly as it can be in some points and as serious in others, that shit really matters.
Yeah.
If everyone thinks they're making a joke, you get the Star Wars franchise. But if everyone honestly gives a fuck,
yeah, it shows. Yeah, if it's not just a paycheck.
Exactly. It was weirdly a passion film for mostly everyone involved by the sounds of it, which is really, it's nice to see because it doesn't have that sort of like, this movie didn't have that Hollywood sheen on it. It never felt produced in that sense. It feels like it has a
does almost kind of feel like an indie in a way.
Exactly. Yeah. This is definitely worth looking at the interview with Mandy Patinkin about that one.
Okay.
Because it was done around, he's probably done it 1,000 times because you know how the interview circles work. But there was a couple of recent ones which may have coincided with the 30-year release or maybe even the 20-year release. After his Law and Order fame and stuff, where he's like a known actor. And
I was reading that he says he has 2 to 3 times daily. People come up to him and say, and say the line, "There's Nega Montoya, you killed my father, prepare to die."
Yeah.
And he loves it. He loves that the film resonated so much that people are still talking about it. And his character. I mean, I think that and Inconceivable are probably the two most quoted lines from the film, to my knowledge.
I mean,
and definitely "My name is Nega Montoya" is the most quoted.
Yeah, surely.
You'd think "As You Wish" would have had a good run, given how many times it's said, but not does it?
It doesn't, because it doesn't. It's not memed, for whatever reason. It's not memed, but Inigo Montoya is.
I'm going to see if I can find the explanation for that scene, but I'm hoping for a trivia version of it. Oh yeah,
I mean, films are a business, but if you're taking it from the perspective that you're making a piece of art, people are going to take it seriously. They're going absolutely. To take a message from it. They're going to look to it to, you know, to inspire them to be better people or to get them through a particular moment or whatever. I certainly do.
So his father died of cancer in 72. And this film came out, what did we say, 74?
87.
Oh, 87. Okay, so it was 15 years, but it's his father. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, interesting stuff. Sad, but sad. Made for a good scene. Yeah. Did you guys want to move along to verdicts? Or do you have any other scenes in particular? I just want to talk about that. That's a great fucking fight scene. That's all.
They're all good. All the sword fighting is really good in the film. It's very well choreographed. It looks real. It
looks great.
And everybody's doing their own stunts. I think Mandy Patinkin. Really? Yeah, Mandy Patinkin. The only time he had a stunt double used was for a flip at some point. The rest of the time, it's him doing everything.
Oh, that's cool.
Interesting.
Cary Elwes too insisted on doing a lot of his own stunt work. Yeah,
this is a little off topic, and have we spoken about it? If we've already spoken about it on the podcast, then I'm not going to talk about it now. Did we talk about Liam Neeson being like a skilled having fucking a big fencer?
Dip? Yeah, just before like 10 minutes ago.
No, he's a fairly skilled swordsman, and this only just reminded me. You're talking about him doing those stunts,
maybe because
and
maybe he's very well equipped.
Exactly, he knows what he's doing. But he's like, I think he was a fitted fencing when he was growing up, and in Phantom Menace, he had to like tone down and learn a different style. Unlike everyone else who got trained up from ground up, because he actually had skills, he was out fencing them in like some of their shit. It was just being too dominant because he was good at it.
So in any sense of the word, you don't want to have a sword fight with Liam Neeson.
Absolutely not.
Do you?
Well, I'm going to jump in and say I definitely recommend this film and Liam Neeson's dick by the sounds of it, if I'm understanding the flow of this conversation correctly. It's great. It's a pity it's not on Netflix at the moment, but I've seen it pop up and on and off a bunch of times, but it was no difficulty to locate this one. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
But I also... weirdly, I'm going to recommend buying this film if you've got the means. Like, I really enjoy it. It's a great to sit there. It's, I hate this expression, but honestly, it's a really good rainy day movie too.
Yeah.
It's very rewatchable.
Get yourself a cup of tea.
Yeah.
The rain's smashing over. I just chill out and watch this film. The only downside is I wish it was a bit longer because you get more out of it that way, but it's perfect for what it is.
It's a perfect size. That's exactly right.
Absolutely. If it was 2 hours and just as good, I'd be so happy.
Mm. Yeah.
Maybe it wouldn't be as good if it was 2 hours.
I'm saying if you kept it.
Really is like that perfect length for a movie though.
Yeah.
What is it, like hour 36, I think?
It's not that, yeah. Between, like I said, between it and Moon for this fortnight or whatever it was, it was beautiful having two films done in 3 hours.
Yeah.
And it's timeless, I think. I don't think this film is going to age. It certainly hasn't in the last 30 years.
Yeah, I don't feel like it has.
The only things that could age would be the action scenes. And like we said, they're good.
Yeah,
they're fine.
Like, but even so, for the universe in context, that's... you know, perfectly modern and perfectly fine. Mm. Like there's nothing about the fights that is outdated because everybody has that same level of technology.
Yeah,
it's not like somebody is running around with a gun and saying, hey, let's sword fight because, you know, none of that, it's not on.
I was just thinking as well, I mean, this film must be somewhat more in the zeitgeist as well, even recently, because we had Deadpool 2. Remember, it got re-released with the Fred Savage kidnapping.
And ripped it right off in a very satisfying way.
I still think that version's the best version of Deadpool 2. Yeah,
definitely.
It was really fun. Yeah. But yeah, do you ever see that one?
I don't think so.
Andrew and I went to go see it because Fox invited us through to go see it, but it was like Deadpool Ever After or Happily Ever After.
Once Upon like a Deadpool, Christmas
that's the one.
Thing. Yeah.
It was literally Deadpool 2, but they had reduced some of the gore to make it go from an R in the States to like an M or whatever, PG-13.
Okay. But replaced it
with
scenes of Deadpool having kidnapped an adult Fred Savage, subjecting him to the same scene of a setup of Princess Bride, reading him the Deadpool story.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It was terrific.
That's good.
It was really well done. Very satisfying to it. And this film, it hasn't staled. In all the times that I've rewatched it, it's still all the reveals, even though you know they're coming, they're built up in a way that is very satisfying. The payoff is there and it's not stale.
Yeah, I feel like if I was to go back and watch it again in a couple months' time, I'd still enjoy it just as much.
Yeah. Well, good. Do. And report back immediately.
Will do.
Is that it? We've all recommended it.
Big thumbs up.
Great film.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about our socials then.
Instagram. We have that at Second Take Podcast. Or if you live in the future, you can tweet us at Second Take TNC.
Jump over onto Le Facebook, facebook.com/Second Take.
Jordan, you've got a Twitter as well?
I do. It is Jordan at Jordan MSPP. It's mostly just retweeting of funny memes and wrestling talk.
Yeah.
Lots of GIFs though. If you like GIFs, wrestling gifts to the roof.
Oh, wonderful. I wish I could say mine was much different, but it's not.
It's mostly Seb retweeting my retweets.
That's it. I'm just there to support Jordan at Bastion_James. Do you have a Twitter that you use at all? I don't think you do, but if you do, now's the time to say it.
A.S. Schossler. I have tweeted 3 times.
Oh, I did that today. that's exciting. If you want to, yeah, jump onto our website, secondtakepodcast.com, or send us an email, secondtakepodcast@gmail.com. We do have a Patreon as well if you'd like to support the show, patreon.com/secondtake. I feel like I'm missing one, but it can't be too important.
Email?
No, I think I did that one.
Good.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like
Keep listening.
Yeah, just keep doing it. Keep doing that thing. We'll be back next week for, I think, James Bond. I want to say James Bond.
Good.
Unless, yeah, it must be. It must be.
The timeline's all wobbly.
Well, we'll be starting off with Casino Royale, getting, you know, Quantum of Solace, Skyfall.
Yep, we're getting worse as we go along.
After Skyfall, it's Spectre.
Yeah.
Is this honestly going to be all new to me. I'm not a James Bond guy at all.
Yeah, I've only seen a couple of these ones.
Yeah, I've heard they're kind of off and on. Like one's good, the other's not so much. One's bad, and the next one's pretty good again.
No, my memory is the first one was good, the second one was bad, the third one was amazing, the fourth one was fine, but not good.
The third one, Skyfall?
Yes.
One of the worst films made of
Top film of the decade. And then, these are the 5 or 6 of them. I feel like I'm forgetting one. Casino Royale, I think Quantum of Solace.
Daniel Craig's 5th Bond film is the one that is
coming out,
being released.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So yeah, we're doing that one as well. So that's fun. This is the first time we've even done. It might be the first spy films we've even done on the show, ooh, let alone the first James Bond films.
My exposure to James Bond is literally playing GoldenEye on the Nintendo 64, yep, and then Austin Powers.
Yeah, it's pretty much somewhere in between those two. So, I know you said at least with it, Andrew, but I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. And if you don't like these ones, well, I got some good news. You have 50 years of movies you can ignore. Because even the bad ones of these, I'd say, are better than some of the better ones of the old ones too.
So have you not seen the GoldenEye film?
I've seen like bits and pieces, but I don't like remember them.
It's good. GoldenEye is very good.
Okay.
Yeah. It's the first one Pierce Brosnan did.
Yeah, well, like, that's like what I remember of James Bond is Pierce Brosnan.
It's quite good.
Yeah.
Literally reviewing all of them would be his own show. It would.
The other Pierce Brosnan Bonds, you know, get worse as they go along. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And the Daniel Craig ones, kind of, I mean, Bond to Bond, it's debatable whether they're a continuation or just a reboot when you change actors, because they sometimes they reference each other, sometimes they don't. The Daniel Craig ones pretty much stand alone. Okay. So there might be an occasional cheeky nod, but you just won't notice it if it's referring to something else. So they're pretty good jumping on points. So
okay,
I'm positive that you'll have an experience.
There you go. I would hope so.
All right. We'll be back on Wednesday for the Radio.
Goodbye.
See you.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.